गोपी जन बाला गिरिवर जाय, गोपी जन गिरिवर जाय, चसार नंदना ब्रज जन Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Asatara Satoshi Shimada Savan Grace Asi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Sharmakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamai Juna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani Pacharani Nirvasesa Sindhavadi Paskachadi Sitarani. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, it is July 2nd, 2013, Skype class from Hawaii. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, The Son of Drona Punished, Text 24. Saeva Jiva Lokasya. Maya mohita chetasa.
Maya mohita chetasa.
Virhatse smena viryena. Shreyo dharmadi lakshanam.
Shreyo dharmadi lakshanam.
Please chant. Saha. That transcendence. Eva, certainly, Jivalokasya, of the conditioned living beings, Maya Mohita, captivated by the illusory energy, Chetasaha, by the heart, Vidhatse, execute, Svena, by your own Viryena influence Shreyaha, ultimate good, Dharma Adi, four principles of liberation, Lakshanam, characterized by. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. And yet, although you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation, characterized by religion and so on, for the ultimate good of the conditioned souls. Purport. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, descends on the material world without being influenced by the material modes of nature. He is eternally beyond the material manifestation. He descends out of his causeless mercy only to reclaim the fallen souls who are captivated by the illusory energy. They are attacked by the material energy and they want to enjoy her under false pretexts, although in essence, the living entity is unable to enjoy. One who is eternally the servitor of the Lord, one is eternally the servitor of the Lord, and when he forgets this position, he thinks of enjoying the material world, but factually he is an illusion. The Lord descends to eradicate this false sense of enjoyment and thus reclaim conditioned souls back to Godhead. That is the all-merciful nature of the Lord for the fallen souls. Sa eva jiva lokasya maya mohita chetasa virhatse svena viryena shreyo dharma rilakshanam. And yet, though you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation characterized by religion and so on for the ultimate good of the conditioned souls. So here Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that in essence the living entity is unable to enjoy. Well, what does this mean? Because we also hear that just as God is an enjoyer, the living entity, being part and parcel of God, is also an enjoyer. So we see both of these situations, that we are in essence an enjoyer, and yet when we are in maya mohita chetasa, here Prabhupada is saying by the heart, cheta means consciousness, when our consciousness is an illusion, we are unable to enjoy. So I see this in my own life, that I am, what's propelling me, what's pushing me, what's driving me, what's enticing me, is the concept of being happy. And yet, in material consciousness, I am incapable of anything that I would really call happiness. I'm capable of experiencing some small, temporary, limited experience of something I can label as happiness. But in material illusion, I never at all experience the kind of happiness that I'm trying to achieve. Never. It just doesn't happen. And I'm sure we've all had this experience, that we are looking for something expansive. We are looking for something great and unlimited in terms of happiness. We're looking for something that's an amazing wow that keeps on wowing and wowing and reverberating as wowing. And we just don't get that. You know, we keep trying, at least myself. I haven't given up, unfortunately. But it's something like the donkey with the carrot in front of him, that it's always out of reach. You know, and when we're in a materialistic society, which we're all in right now, practically speaking, everyone on the planet is in a more or less materialistic society. So we're told that this sort of incredible enjoyment is available to us if we simply do this and that materially. You know, if we simply make enough money, then we will have this sort of expansive material enjoyment. We will be the enjoyer if we could just be rich enough. You know, we could have all the comforts for our body and mind that we wanted, and we would have power and control, etc. This is probably one of the main things that we're told. Or if we could just have enough sense enjoyment, if we could have a very attractive and compatible sexual partner and very attractive, intelligent, and compatible family members, very wonderful food to eat, music, beautiful music to listen to, if we're in a wonderful climate that's not too hot and not too cold, if we had very comfortable and beautiful clothes to wear, and very attractive and comfortable furniture to use, beautiful artwork to look at, gorgeous scenery in our natural environment, and vibrant health, then we would find this expansive enjoyment. Right? Or we're told if we can be a good person, you know, if we could just be moral and righteous, if we had good values, then we would find this expansive enjoyment. So this is, of course, artha and kama and dharma, which here it's explained that the Lord is coming to institute, but the Lord is coming to institute it here for Shreya, not for Preya. Anyway, we're told that if we find these things, then we will find this joy. We'll be the enjoyers. We will enjoy. And we go through birth after birth after birth after birth after birth. We try in this way and that way. We try to do these things as a resident of Earth, as a resident of the higher planets, perhaps even in the lower planets, as an animal, as a human, as a male, as a female, in all different species and in all different conditions. And we take the basic building blocks and shift them this way and that way and this way and that way. But Prabhupada says that in essence, we are unable to enjoy. So what is this? So then the Supreme Lord comes, interestingly enough, he comes to use these very things, this dharma, artha, and kama, and moksha also. He's come to give us these very things. Here it just said dharma adi. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says this refers to just dharma, artha, and kama, not moksha, although here Prabhupada's giving all four. So Krishna's using these very things that are enticing us to enjoy separately from Krishna and not satisfying us, and he uses this to bring us to Shreya Dharmadi. And it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada translates Dharma Adi as four principles of liberation also. So what is the basic problem? Why is it that when we try for these things, or even let's even mention moksha. Moksha is we're trying to be expansively happy by realizing that we're all one, by realizing this, that we're spiritual beings and that everything is one and everything is spiritual. And there's certainly always people, even now in Kali Yuga, who are trying to get unlimited joy in this way. We refer to them as spiritual people or sometimes as New Age people. So they're looking for, and sometimes different religionists also are looking in that way. So what's the real problem here and what's the real solution? Because we have this dichotomy that we're looking for unlimited happiness, unlimited in time. We're looking for happiness that doesn't end. And we're looking for happiness that's unlimited in its quality. It's not that we just want to eat, you know, French fries forever and have it be tasty. We want happiness that's far beyond something very limited. We want happiness that's going to encompass all of our senses simultaneously. And we want happiness that's going to also fill our mind and intelligence, all of our senses, our mind and intelligence, have a very high level of quality, and that goes on forever. So we want it unlimited in both quality and quantity. And yet, when we try to achieve this through dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, which is all anybody is doing in the world, we are not able to achieve it. We're able to achieve, at best, very limited happiness in quality and quantity. We're able to achieve happiness that's extremely temporary. It's very rare if we're experiencing happiness for more than a few hours at a time, without interruption. I'd say that most of us have not experienced even 24 hours of uninterrupted happiness. What to speak of a week, or a month, or a year, there's always some intervening distress. And we've not been able to experience happiness that was unbounded in quality. We've only been able to, even if we had a few solid hours of happiness with zero intervening distress, it wasn't happiness on all levels. We didn't feel that during these 3-4 hours I'm experiencing unlimited happiness. So why is this? Why do we have a desire for something, a drive for something, that we don't seem to be able to fulfill? And is there a way to fulfill it? Well, taking this one sentence and this one purport in isolation from the rest of Srila Prabhupada's statements and from the rest of Shastra, one might conclude that we're wanting something impossible. He says, in essence, the living entity is unable to enjoy. And in fact, the materialists sometimes come to this very conclusion. I met one such person recently in South Africa. He said that this desire for enjoyment is an impossible to fulfill desire. It cannot be fulfilled. Therefore, we should enjoy. We should enjoy a situation where we cannot enjoy. That was his conclusion. We should become satisfied with our lack of satisfaction. So many materialists propound this particular outlook. We should just accept and learn to be happy with the lack of happiness, because that's all there is. Of course, if one examines that statement logically, it's absurd, because the statement itself is still admitting our desire for happiness and satisfaction. One should become satisfied with misery. You know, okay, that doesn't really make any sense. Also, if you ask them where does the desire for unlimited happiness come from, they can't give you any answer. So this gentleman in South Africa, who had voluntarily attended our program, and I said to him, if you're really satisfied with dissatisfaction, then why are you here? Better that you leave, because you don't want what we're offering. But anyway, when I asked him, where does the desire for unlimited happiness come from? He just said it was some sort of an evolutionary fluke. It was some sort of a mistake in evolution. So I suppose if we really operated properly according to these philosophy, we wouldn't have a desire for happiness. So I'd like you to imagine for a moment if we had no desire for happiness, if our programming, our essence, was that we really didn't care if we were happy or not, we didn't care if we were enjoying or not. What kind of a picture do you get? I mean, I get a picture of this very like gray society where everyone's sort of an automaton, you know, where everyone has, we would become matter. Because matter is the only thing that doesn't care if it's happy or not. It has no conception of such a thing. You know, the chair that I'm sitting on has no desire for enjoyment. There's no consciousness. Chetasa, as soon as there's chetasa, as soon as there's consciousness, as soon as there's the heart, then there's desire, and there's a desire even in the most insignificant living entity, even in the mosquitoes and the amoebas and the blades of grass, there's some desire for pleasure. And so therefore, this sentence cannot be taken in isolation. It has to be understood in the context of this whole purport and in the context of the Shastra in general. What does it mean, therefore,
So Prabhupada says in many places that the living entity, just like Krishna, is an enjoyer. So the problem is that when you're under the illusory energy, you become, in essence, incapable of enjoyment. Or one could say, as Prabhupada says in many other places, that a disconnected hand cannot enjoy. You know, when my hand is connected to my body, then my hand experiences something that I would call enjoyment. But the hand is not experiencing enjoyment independently of me. And in essence, the hand in and of itself is not an enjoyer. In essence, I am the enjoyer. And the hand enjoys because it's connected with me. It doesn't enjoy independently. It has no, in essence, it cannot enjoy independently. My eyes are enjoying the beautiful Hawaiian foliage that I can see out my window. But is my eye enjoying that? No, in essence, my eye is not an enjoyer. I am enjoying it. And my eye is enjoying because it's connected with me. Prabhupada uses this sort of analogy all the time, that this, or the various parts of the body have to serve the stomach, and by serving the stomach, they are also nourished. So I could say that I feel some pleasure in my hand. Thank you, Krishna, my hand works properly. I have a fully functional hand, and if my hand touches something that's soft, there is some pleasure there in the hand. The pleasure is experienced in the hand, but yet it's not really experienced in the hand at all. One can say that it's experienced in the brain completely. There's not really any experience of pleasure in the hand. So in a similar way, all pleasure is experienced by Krishna. But yet, we are individual living entities who are achintya bheda bheda tattva. We are completely one with Krishna, and yet we are a separate individual with a separate personality. Just like when Krishna expanded himself as all the cowherd boys and the calves, and each calf and each boy had an individual personality. Eternally, they had an individual personality. Lord Brahma was so amazed and overwhelmed, actually, when he saw that Krishna had created identical boys and calves, because he understood this is impossible. There's only one of each jiva, and each jiva is unique. You cannot have two jivas exactly the same. And in fact, the other set were not jivas, and in fact, they were not exactly the same, because the relationship of those duplicates with each other and with others was not the same. There was more prema than there had been between the original jivas and others, and between the duplicates that were Vishnu Tattva and others. The rasa was somewhat different, or perhaps very different. So we are, in one sense, completely separate individuals. We're not the same. I'm not the same as any other jiva. I'm not one with any other jiva, and I'm not one with God. I'm a separate individual who has my own personality and my own existence and my own specific desires and my own specific likes and dislikes, and yet I am fully one with Krishna and with all other living entities and with the material energy. And when I act in that relationship of oneness, ekatvan anupasyate, when I act in that relationship of oneness, then I am also an enjoyer. Just like when the hand is connected to the body and acts in accord with the body, the hand is also an enjoyer. So my inner desire to enjoy comes from the fact that when I'm in my proper position, I do indeed enjoy. In fact, I enjoy practically as God. You know, can you say that the hand, the enjoyment of the hand, is not the enjoyment of the whole? Can you really distinguish like that? Can you say my hand is enjoying less than I am? Does that make any sense? It's an absurd situation, because my hand is one with my body. In fact, if you're holding my hand, I can say you're touching my body. although the hand is not the whole body. And with Krishna, each part of Krishna is also the whole. There's no difference between the tip of Krishna's fingernail and the whole Krishna. He's not whole in part like that. So the enjoyment that the living entity experiences with Krishna is not less than the enjoyment of Krishna. That's not a fact. That conception that Krishna is getting some more enjoyment or some different taste of enjoyment than I am is in fact the whole root of our material illusion. That is the essence of it. Well, God is getting some sort of enjoyment and some quantity or quality or taste of enjoyment that he's not sharing with me. Therefore, let me try to enjoy separately from him so I can experience that myself. That's the whole beginning and root of illusion, this envy. That's not the case. And not only is that not the case, but Krishna desires us to experience his enjoyment. That's his desire. Exactly like Prabhupada gives the analogy all the time, that the father wants the family members to share in his enjoyment. That's natural. I mean, maybe not all fathers, but the prototype of the father, the epitome of the father, the idealized form of a family. And those of us who have children, we want our children to enjoy as much as we do. Why do parents want to give their children an inheritance? You know, in a normal family, the father is sharing his money with his wife and children. In fact, he's working for his wife and children. In fact, he's earning more money than he needs for himself. Why? Prabhupada gives the example all the time. Why does a man marry and have children? To increase his enjoyment. It's his enjoyment that his family is enjoying. That's the father and mother are not generally envious of their own children. In fact, many parents will sacrifice their own enjoyment so their children can enjoy more than them. The parents who only have, you know, a few years of education, they take pleasure if their children get a college degree. This is very common. They'll work hard so the child can be wealthier and more educated, etc., than themselves. Parents are not, again, generally miserly. It's not that the parents are wearing beautiful clothes and their children are wearing rags, or the parents are eating opulent food and the children are getting the leftovers. We would consider this abuse. We'd consider this criminal if the parents were not having the children enjoy on the same level that they are. You know, we sit at the same table with our parents, do we not? So Krishna is also like that. The food, even in our sadhana bhakti, the food we offer to Krishna, we also eat. The incense we offer to Krishna, we also smell. It's the same incense. It's not that we offer Krishna the finest incense and then we put that in a sealed room and only Krishna smells it, and then for us we have nothing or we have lower. No. We offer to Krishna and then we also enjoy the prasadam. In fact, it's explained that Krishna becomes happy when he sees the living entities are happy. And that is the essence of this verse. Krishna wants the living entities to be happy on his level. He wants us to be happy with him. He wants us to experience that unlimited enjoyment. He doesn't want us rotting. Krishna is not the God portrayed in some religions who just says, you know, I want you to suffer eternally. That is not Krishna. Krishna's mood is, I want you to enjoy eternally. And even if we're stubbornly, insistently doing things which are preventing us from enjoyment, so Krishna is trying his best to induce us over and over and over again. Although he's full in himself, he doesn't have a need in a material sense. Therefore, although you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you are certainly transcendent. It's not that Krishna has some lack, even though they're rebellious living entities. But just out of his own energy, out of his own desire, causeless desire, he comes even to the material world. I mean, the upright citizens, they don't really have a need for the people in the prison to be reformed. Let them rot in the prison. Who cares? Our lives will go on nicely without those people in the prison. And yet, there are many persons who care, just because they care. They go in the prison and they try to elevate the prisoner. So Krishna cares. He's loving. Now, how does he do this? Interesting that he uses here Dharma Adi for Shreya. So we're engaged in the illusioned conditioned souls are engaged in Dharma Artha Kama Moksha to try to enjoy separately from Krishna. So Krishna takes these same things that we're doing to get away from him and uses them to bring us back to reality. So Krishna is extremely clever. And he says, okay, you want Dharma? Do it this way. You want Artha? Do it this way. You want Kama even? Do it this way. You want Moksha? Do it this way. And if you do it this way, he says, then you'll actually come to unlimited happiness. And what is the this way that is connected with bhakti? So our desire to be happy through righteousness and values, etc., that can be used in bhakti. Our desire to be wealthy and opulent can be used in bhakti. Our desire to enjoy our senses can be used in bhakti. And our desire to be liberation, to be liberated, can be used in devotion. Yat kiroshi yat agnashi yat tohosi didansi yat tapasyasi kuntaya tat kirushva madarpanam. Of course, ultimately, sarva dharma and pricha jama may come sarnam brajaham tvam sarva pape bhyamoksha ishyam imasutra. So eventually, by engaging in dharma artha kama moksha as an offering, yagna tat kamano natra lokoyam karma bandhana tadartam karma kotaya moksha ishyam imasutra. Eventually, after taking this dharma artha kama moksha, and trying to engage those desires and service and so forth, and then one starts to feel some happiness that's behind this dharma artha kama moksha, and then one starts saying, why don't I just go for that directly? Why don't I go for bhakti directly? And Krishna also teaches the direct path. Mam mana bhava mad bhaktel majaji mam namaskar mam eva shashyuktai mam atmana mam parat. And one can just think of Krishna, become his devotee, worship him and offer obeisances to him. And if one does that fully, one has no need for this dharma artha kama moksha at all. Whatever one would get, as Krishna tells Arjuna, whatever you would get from all these other things you can get from bhakti, whatever the results of fruitive activity. So whether indirectly or directly, Krishna is concerned with the Shreya, the real benefit of the living entity. And he teaches both. He teaches both because most people are not willing to go for the direct path immediately. It's just what it is. If you go to most people and say, oh, the essence of your problem is that you're trying to be the enjoyer separately from Krishna, why don't you just make Krishna the enjoyer? Because that is the essence of the problem. Most people will not accept it. But if you say to most people, yes, yes, you want to be happy in this way, fine. Just do it a little differently. Now, people will do that. Just do it with a different consciousness. And people will do that. And finally, they'll come to the real thing. Because the real problem here is not exactly what you're doing, but it's consciousness. Maya mohita chetasa. As Prabhupada writes in the 14th chapter of Krishna book, The Prayers of Lord Brahma, that Maya is only within the mind. Because really, we are connected with Krishna. We cannot be disconnected from Krishna. That is not possible. So whether we are in essence incapable of enjoyment, as Prabhupada says here, or whether we are in essence enjoying, is simply a matter of our consciousness. Are we connected or disconnected? Or shall we say, are we conscious of the connection that is already there? And are we acting in that consciousness? Are we acting in that way? So in our process of bhakti, we become aware that God is all good, as Prabhupada says in the purport to Gita 15:15, that God is all good and God is all merciful. That Krishna gets no pleasure from, no desire from, he doesn't want to have the conditioned soul suffer. We do not suffer because it is the will of God that we suffer. If we suffer, it is because we are out of harmony with the will of God. And that Krishna wants us to come to Shreya, wants us to come to ultimate good, and that he comes here again and again and again and again and again. That manam srajamyam. Yuge, yuge. The Krishna is coming again and again and again. Just to induce us, please come and be happy. Please come and be happy. Please come and be happy. Please do not stay, as Prabhupada says here. Get this false sense of enjoyment and come to the platform of real enjoyment. So the question for us at every moment is, am I conscious that I'm connected with Krishna? Do I really believe that God is all good and all merciful? Or do I blame him for my suffering? Am I trying to enjoy separately from Krishna? Or am I trying to enjoy by having Krishna be the enjoyer? In which case, then, I would fully enjoy. And we don't need to imagine a society where this is the case. A society where this is the case is described to us in the Shastra. Chintamani prakrasadmashu kalpaviksha lakshavateshu suravya rabipalayamtan lakshmi sahasra satasam brahmasayavimana. A world full of goddesses of fortune and Surabhi cows and desire fulfillment trees and Chintamani gems. That is a society where everyone is having unlimited enjoyment in their proper position. And we can experience that if we so choose. That is the question. What are we choosing? Questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions, etc. But is that in response to your question about that, you know, that you're saying that that punishment doesn't fit the crime, that embracing the red hot form of the opposite sex doesn't fit the crime of illicit sex? I don't know. I don't think we understand how harmful illicit sex is to the individuals and to society. That those who have illicit sex actually do cause as much pain to themselves, to others, and to society in general, as they receive back in this hellish world, that it really is a fair punishment, and that it is a punishment meant to create understanding in the living entity, just as a medical procedure is meant to balance, even a very severe medical procedure is meant to balance the disease in that living entity.
Nice. Good answers. I like that. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Hare Krishna, Mother of Mula. I hope I can formulate my question clearly. You were talking about this, the spiritual enjoyment that when we're connected to Krishna, we actually can experience the same enjoyment, the same bliss. And my question is, I actually would like to hear a little bit about then we in this condition right now, coming from such a millions of lifetimes trying to enjoy in this world, and as a devotees, then we trying to connect to Krishna, but we still yet not you know, completely pure, we may be very subtle shift can happen when we try to enjoy as a devotee. We're trying to, we still that the same mood can drag, and actually can be so subtle that we can't even notice that. So could you please little bit elaborate about that fine line?
So what I think you're asking is that even when we become a devotee, we can still be trying to enjoy separately from Krishna in the name of Krishna consciousness. How do you see that, and how dangerous it is? So I would say that should be expected. That generally in the beginning, it's just like this Dharma Artha Kama Moksha. So, those are all ways of trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. But look at something like Dharma. You know, it's easy perhaps to see how Artha and Kama are separate from Krishna, although even those can be fully, totally connected with Krishna. But Dharma and Moksha, it's a little trickier. Because people can say, well, I'm doing my dharma because it's in the scripture. But the motive for doing dharma can simply be for honor and prestige. And moksha, one can certainly say, well, that's spiritual, but one can be engaging in moksha just because, you know, I want my own happiness. I'm not really concerned about Krishna's happiness. Anyway, I would say in the beginning, for most people who start on the path of bhakti, generally, we are still seeking our own happiness. Generally, we're seeking Krishna's happiness only theoretically, only on some sort of a partial intellectual conviction. And we probably don't even have much of an idea of what it means. But it seems that Krishna is very grateful just for that attempt. So the gross materialist doesn't even give any kind of verbal acknowledgement or effort or endeavor or anything to the concept that I should get my pleasure by pleasing Krishna, that I should put God at the center, that I'm a part of God. They don't even, there's nothing. You know, and if you forget that, just go and hang out with some materialistic friends or relatives for a while, or work at a regular job, or, you know, if just deal for a little while with grossly materialistic people. And they have nothing like that. Nothing. No concept. So when one takes to bhakti and one starts to have that concept that I want to make Krishna happy, that I'm not going to try to become happy independently of Krishna, I'm going to find all of my happiness in connection with Krishna. Krishna is so happy with that. Therefore, because Krishna is happy with that, and he reciprocates with the beginning devotee. We see this practically, that when people first take up Krishna consciousness, that often, generally perhaps, they have incredible spiritual experiences. We find this happen even when we're preaching to people who aren't even taking up the practice of bhakti seriously. That just take eating some prasadam and dancing for a minute with the kirtan party, they'll get some incredible experience. This is explained in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. They're actually experiencing some kind of shadow or reflective ecstasy. And Prabhupada says that shadow or reflective ecstasy can be real. It's not that it's some sort of material illusion. They're touching the reality. Prabhupada talks about if you're a child, if you touch the fire innocently, you still get burned. So if you touch something that's bhakti,
you start experiencing bhakti. Krishna is pleased. That very thought that I want to get my pleasure by pleasing Krishna does please Krishna. And when it pleases Krishna, you do feel pleasure from pleasing Krishna. Isn't that nice? And then what does Krishna do? He's happy and he reciprocates. Teshim sanatyuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam vidadi bhumiyoguntam yena mamupayantite. And he starts showing you, all right, you have this desire which is pleasing me. And therefore you are getting pleasure in connection with me, but you still have these other desires. In Madhurya Kadambini, this is described very nicely, how our spiritual and material desires gradually and proportionally, the spiritual desires increase and the material desires decrease. So certainly we should not be afraid of enjoyment in Krishna consciousness. That is real enjoyment. And we should gradually, proportionally, be getting our enjoyment in Krishna consciousness. And whatever other impure desires are there, Krishna will reveal them, and we will let go of them if we're in the process. Basically, the way it happens is whatever genuine spiritual enjoyment we're each getting, which we are each getting if we're in the process, we're getting some real enjoyment from connection with Krishna. Parandusvarnivartite is so much nicer than our illusory enjoyment that we keep comparing it, and we gradually, generally, for most of us it's gradually, as we see the difference, we give up the inferior. That's basically how it works. So the things we want to avoid is, first of all, we want to avoid avoiding Krishna conscious pleasure. Because if you're not allowing yourself to get Krishna conscious pleasure, you will not give up the inferior thing. You just won't. So you'll be stuck forever, or for a very long time. So one has to allow oneself to get Krishna conscious pleasure, even though it's mixed. It is that Krishna conscious pleasure, that genuine pleasure, which we're getting at least to some degree, that is really going to give us our impetus for giving up our nonsense. There's nothing else that's going to give us our impetus for giving up our nonsense. Nothing else. We're not going to have impetus for giving up our nonsense just by intellectual conviction. That's Gyan Yoga. That's not bhakti. Our impetus is going to come from bhakti. So the first thing is to, as much as possible, get as much as possible spiritual pleasure as we can. Mixed or unmixed, doesn't matter. Whatever real spiritual pleasure one can get it. Absorb yourself in that. And then when Krishna reciprocates with you, what is it? What does Krishna say? He says, Maschitam magata parnam borayantas prasparam katayantas tamam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Become satisfied and happy in Krishna consciousness. And when we do that, then tesham sadatayuktanam and tesham evadukamparitam. When we're feeling that Krishna conscious satisfaction and Krishna conscious happiness, it may be partial. Then Krishna from within the heart, he will illuminate and will see the difference. And then the other thing we have to do is when Krishna illuminates, we have to choose rightly. You can think of it this way. Let's say a person is eating all processed foods, chemically processed foods. How are you going to get them to eat a healthy diet? What will be the process? You'll have to start giving them healthy food. You can't just convince them theoretically. You have to have healthy food available for them to eat. So let's say they're still eating processed food some of the time and they're eating healthy food some of the time. And then they can compare. You know, would I rather have a tree-ripened, locally grown, organically grown peach? Or would I rather have, you know, canned peach-flavored water? What would I rather have? You have to be eating both in order to decide. And only when eating both can you look at the, you know, artificially peach-flavored water and say, yuck. And then you have to choose.
So we have to be experiencing real Krishna consciousness and allowing ourselves to get pleasure from real Krishna consciousness. And then B, we have to, when Krishna shows us the comparison in our heart, which he will do over and over again, we have to choose. As he says to Arjuna, we have to choose the real over the false. And as we keep doing that over and over and over again, then eventually our lives will be full just of the real.
Do you have time for maybe just one more question?
Okay, one more.
Actually, it's kind of like two parts, but anyway, first is real quick. In this verse, then, when it's referring to Dharmadi, the four principles of liberation, four principles of religiosity.
Well, here Prabhupada translates in the word for word as four principles of liberation, which again is very interesting.
Okay. Because you hear this a lot amongst devotees, you know, they ask that, I want to get out of this material world, is that a material desire? Shouldn't I just want to serve Krishna, not to get out? So is that what's being spoken of here? Is that the desire for moksha is mixed, but Krishna gives us a way to get out?
Yes, all of these. If we're still conditioned, then we still have desire for all four, frankly. Some more than others. You know, I mean, most of us have some desire for wealth and opulence. And can any of us say we have no desire for such things? And we have some desire for sense pleasures, and we have some desire to be a good person, to be respected and respectable, which is dharma. I mean, I hear a lot of devotees preaching dharma, ordinary dharma, frankly, which is rajagun. But, and yeah, sure, the desire for liberation, that's sattvagun. The desire for wealth is mixed rajagun and tamagun. The desire for kama is tamagun. So it's expected that we still have some of these desires, but we try to dovetail them in Krishna's service. Okay, I want to be a good, respectable person. Let me be a good, respectable person as a devotee. Let me have a good reputation as a devotee of Krishna, not just as a pious person separate from Krishna. Okay, you know, that's a start. And then your for Krishna starts becoming dominant. You know, let me become liberated for Krishna. Let me become purified for Krishna. Let me become purified because Krishna wants me to become purified. Let me become liberated because then I can be with Krishna. And after a while, the being with Krishna starts to dominate. That's the concept. But, you know, let me enjoy my senses for Krishna. Let me, I know, I want to eat a pizza. Let me offer it to Krishna. I want to wear beautiful clothes. Let me wear, you know, beautiful clothes that will remind others of Krishna. I want to have a party. You know, let me have a Krishna, let me have a Rath Yatra. So it starts with that, and gradually the Krishna factor takes over. I mean, you can only be at the point, it's sort of circular, you know, you can only be at the point where you don't care at all about your own gratification when you are already fully gratified. Prabhupada says that the reason that the devotee has no material desires is that they're full in Krishna consciousness. It's not that you empty yourself of material desires and you're just empty. We're satisfied by fullness. We're not Buddhists. So what we're trying to do, what does Prabhupada also say, when a cup's full of milk, then there's no room for ink. So we're just trying to pour milk into our cup as much as possible and stop pouring the ink in. So you want to do both. You want to pour the milk in and stop pouring in the ink. And eventually the milk will overflood the ink. So it's normal that until we're completely filled with milk, we're still going to have some ink in there, which means we're going to have desires for dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And here it's explained. Krishna's teaching dharma, artha, kama, moksha for Shreya. He's saying, okay, you want these things. Here's how to do them so they'll bring you to bhakti.
And frankly, we're all doing that to some extent, unless we're 100% pure. And even Prabhupada encouraged that. Prabhupada's encouragement of Varnashram, which is Dharma, Prabhupada so much encouraged Varnashram, while at the same time telling us that it was not necessary for bhakti and that it was material.
Many devotees say that, you know, that they really want to get out of this material world. And then I'll say something like that, you know, actually, I don't mind coming back to this material world if I can take part in Lord Chaitanya's movement. And then they'll turn around to me and say, oh, you're more advanced than I am. And I'm rolling my eyes because I know how attached I am to are attracted to gross material pleasures, and I look at them and they're not. So are they? No, actually they're more advanced than I am. So when I say that, is that just naivety, being attached to the material world? How would you analyze that?
I would say that we are all each advanced in different areas, and to look at person A and person B and say person B is more advanced than person A, or person A is more advanced than person B, when neither of them is totally pure. We're advanced in different ways at different times. So there's certain things that I have realization about and that I'm fixed in that someone else is not. And then there'll be ways that they're advanced in and they're fixed in that I'm not. And it's just the way it is. You know, I mean, there are people who just struggle to get their 16 rounds done or struggle to follow the regular principles, but they have a wonderful attitude towards serving other devotees. And then you have some people who are very fixed in their vows and they really have trouble dealing with other devotees. I mean, just which one of them is more advanced? You can't take the different stages of advancement and put each person into a little box. The comparison that I give is to physical maturity. So when one goes from being a child to an adult, if you took two people at the age of, say, 16 and say, which one is more mature? Mature in what? So there's physical maturity. There's emotional maturity, there's social maturity, there's intellectual maturity, and they're different. So one person might be more mature physically and less mature socially, and another person might be more mature socially and less mature physically. Now there's a certain point at which you can say a person is totally an adult in every respect. Okay, this person is completely an adult in all areas. And, you know, this person is totally a child in all areas. But if you're talking about the maturing process, you can talk about stages of maturity, but you're talking about different areas. If you look at the different descriptions of the stages of spiritual maturity, which I've identified about 20 different descriptions of the stages of devotion, the progression of devotion, you'll find that most of them are talking about different things. It's not that they're just using different words to describe the same thing, but they're talking about different things. Just like there's a description of the Kanista Majjhima Uttama in the 11th canto that's talking about relationships, how spiritually advanced you are in terms of your relationships. Do you think what you're doing is the only spiritual path and everyone else is a nonsense and, you know, God is only in the temple, he's only in your temple and you don't treat anyone nicely? Or do you have love for God, friendship with the devotees, care for the innocent and avoiding of the atheist? Or do you see everyone as part and parcel of God? So that's in terms of relationships. Then you have the description of offensive chanting, clearing stage, and pure chanting. But those two things don't totally correspond. You can't say that the Majjhima of one stage is totally the Majjhima of the other stage.
they're not. Or what to speak of Rupa Goswami's description in the Upadeshamrita, where he says the Kanista is somebody who's chanting the holy name, like someone who's received first initiation or has just started to chant. The Majjhima is the person who's received second initiation. And the Uttama as undeviated love, ahoitukiya pratiyata, and no envy towards other living entities. So that's quite different. Can you say that everybody who's received diksha and is worshipping the deity is also a Majjhima Bhakta according to the 11th canto? No. Can you say that anyone who's not yet received second initiation is engaged in offensive chanting? No. They don't correspond. So they're describing different things. Just exactly like materially, if you're describing maturity, you describe different things. So you as an individual have certain areas of your Krishna consciousness in which you're probably extremely advanced. And you have areas of your Krishna consciousness that are not as advanced. And someone else's areas may be different from yours. And that's just the way it is. You know, we don't profit so much. I mean, we have to compare ourselves to others in terms of choosing our association. We should choose to associate with people who are at our level or more advanced and be kind to those who are less advanced. So we have to discriminate levels of advancement in order to choose with whom to associate and how to associate. But you can't really discriminate levels of advancement in the way that you're talking about it. It's not real, because different people have different realizations in different areas, and it's not real. You know, I hope that that's sufficient for you. You know, what you can do is you can see people who are more advanced than you in certain areas and have that as your inspiration. And in whatever areas you do have some element.
Your voice is muffled.
I'm sorry.
No.
You know, in with people who are advanced than you in certain areas, you can take inspiration in your own life for those areas. And the areas where you really see that you have received mercy of Guru and Krishna, then you can be grateful. You know, if you've received some inspiration from Guru and Krishna, that you really are inspired, that if Krishna wants to take me back to Godhead, or Krishna wants to, whatever Krishna wants to send me, I'm satisfied with that. So that's wonderful, and to feel grateful for that. And if there's some area of your life that you see is really a mess and somebody else has that together, then use that for humility and to think of how you'd like to be inspired by someone else. All right, I really think I have to end now. It's way over time. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.